This is Greg Olson, and I'm thrilled to introduce my new podcast, TE1. TE1 will chronicle a 60-year evolution of the tight end position, from its origins as an obscure, overlooked blocking role to the versatile superstar position that it is today. I'll explore the evolution of the position through conversations with some of the all-time game-changing tight ends. And just like the incredible tight ends we sit down with on my new show, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. This truck is all about grit, strength, and dependability. The same attributes it takes to be a tight end.
This week we have Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. Sorry, it's like that had to have been the most awkward transition I've made from off mic to on mic in a long time.
Yeah, it was my fault. Like, I was trying to, you know, toss a few different things at you, and then we've got some bullshit going here.
So this is what happens when your brain is completely fried. I'm actually, my elbows are on my desk right now, and it's just sweat. So there's a nice visual for the Light Years podcast listeners this week.
Anyone who's in California, in the Bay Area right now, it's one of those like once every 2 years heat waves going on. Not fun. Oh. Not fun for a city that prides itself on not needing air conditioning.
Yeah, like my wife and I went down to Manhattan Beach yesterday because she was seeing some friends, like in an outdoor, socially distanced, like whole deal. Course. And I just like went and hung out like kind of down by the pier, like at a table, and did like work at a coffee shop, and it was 107 easy. Like, it was miserable
in Manhattan Beach. It doesn't keep. Wow.
It was probably like 98 in Manhattan Beach. It was no. I think I read
Manhattan Beach like never 90... really goes over like 85, right?
Yeah, it was like 98 in Santa Barbara yesterday. Like, what? Jesus. Are we We sound like the Californians, like in SNL right now. We just keep yelling out. We're going to start like hitting all these random intersections soon.
I don't know if we're going to put the video promo on social for this episode, but it's going to be one of the more sad ones with like all three of us just sweating up a storm.
Just sweating. We all have these like white beige backgrounds right now. Yeah, but this is a dream.
sweating, talking about Killian Hayes, but where should we start?
Sam like trimmed his beard for this. Like, yes. That was the move. I didn't even do that for you guys. I apologize.
I mean, the heat wave forced the beard trim. I'm going to be honest. It's like, God, it's too hot. I got to do something here. Just full trim. So where do we want to start? So obviously, I guess 2 weeks ago now, we finally figured out where the Warriors are picking. Number two overall. I think they're thrilled with that because I don't think they wanted the pressure of the number one pick.
Well, there's like a $2.5 million difference too.
Right. There's that too. I'm sure Joey Lightyears doesn't mind the savings. But what I was going to say is, so we're sitting here, and now it's really kind of, now we can honestly talk about who they can potentially draft. Cause I felt like a lot of the draft conversations were, it was getting a little tiresome because it's like, why are we talking about, you know, Anthony Edwards? They might pick fifth and might not even have a shot at him, for example.
Right.
So now that we know that they're all in play, I guess it seems like, is it fair to say the consensus is LaMelo, Anthony Edwards, and James Wiseman are going to be the top three picks?
I don't know that I would say they're going to be the top three picks, if only because I'm not convinced that the Warriors and Timberwolves, for that matter, stay in their current draft positions. So, right. Like, I think that there has been a consensus that has formed that those are the three guys with the highest upside in this class. Those are the three guys that NBA scouts look at and think, if we don't fuck up the development of these guys, they have the highest ceiling. Now, there are a lot of different incentives for all of these teams. There are a lot of really interesting roster situations, like Minnesota. I don't know what I would do if I was Minnesota, to be honest.
It was actually my second question in the rundown, but we can get into that right now. I think Minnesota picking first somewhat hurts the Warriors' leverage.
Yes.
Because Minnesota has, I mean, they don't have their pick next year, and they clearly feel pressure that, like, if they don't start winning, you know, Towns is gone. And so they're a team who, like, basically every trade scenario you run for the Warriors, you could run for them as well. Because they,
right,
instead of a trade exception, they have cap space. So they could technically eat someone's contract.
Yep.
Well, in a lot of scenarios.
And they essentially have the expiring, the same level number with James Johnson.
Right. Oh, so, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a deal that I've been throwing out there for a while is that the Warriors could take James Johnson into that trade exception.
Yep.
And then use Johnson as an expiring deal in a secondary trade in order to get a player that is up to like $20.2 million.
Right.
As opposed to $17.2 million, which is what the trade exception currently is for. Now,
that would be someone like Miles Turner or Aaron Gordon, guys who make just like a shade over the exception.
Right. Yeah. It would put them in the ballpark for just like a few more guys. And that could be important, or it could be a circumstance now where Joe Lacob and those that own the Warriors are now saddled with a new arena that costs billions of dollars to build and may not want to use the trade exception to its fullest extent because there is an enormous financial incentive at play for them. Like, I think that a big part of what the Warriors' plan is going to be involves, when does the season start?
Right.
What are the chances that fans end up in these arenas? Can they actually make money off of this building that they just made in order to make money?
Are we talking about like another short-term hit, or are we talking about a massive long-term economic hit to them? That type. Those are the type of questions they're weighing.
Right. So like, I think that for the Warriors specifically, the massive implications of the upcoming collective bargaining negotiations that are going to occur at some point within the next, let's say 30 to even 60 days.
Right.
Right. Like, cause frankly, like I have not really talked to many people who think the draft is going to be October 16th. So like it's going to be complicated for the Warriors, particularly because they have more balls in the air almost than anyone.
Right.
If the Timberwolves are trying to do the exact same thing that the Warriors are doing, we're already questioning the fact that who actually wants that second pick. Now you're trying to find a second team that's going to want that second pick, right? Because presumably,
probably get the same package and get it to Minnesota for the same thing.
I think it's just, if you're thinking about it from Minnesota's perspective, it does require the Warriors to really find 2 to 3 trade partners that'll want the same thing that they want, which I guess screws them over.
Yeah. I mean, it's like last time Sam was on the pod, you kind of talked about like Marcus Smart for a top pick, and like, who knows if Boston really wants to do that or not. But like,
I don't think they would.
Yeah. In theory, you know, Marcus Smart also kind of the ideal person to put next to D'Angelo Russell. So yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, like, you know, any vet player who can help win now that you'd be willing to trade the number 2 pick for probably also applies for the team who has the number 1 pick.
Well, it's crazy. Like, I was trying to come up with deals for the Hornets because I'm writing about the Hornets for This Week at some point. And one of the like last resort deals for the Warriors that's like 10% interesting to me is taking Cody Zeller, finishing their, just like getting that center taken care of for next year. Great screener who would work really well with Clay and Stephen Curry, right? Like,
yeah. Delightfully unexciting, but effective.
Right. And then essentially do like number 2 for Cody Zeller and number 3. So they maintain the lottery pick that they want, like the top 3 pick. They fill the center hole. And like, and if you're the Hornets, you guarantee yourself one of Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball. So why wouldn't you do that? And that's an organization that like desperately needs star power. So,
and also likes to save money. So getting out of Zeller's deal wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for them.
Right, 100%. Although that, do you know how much money that team has locked up over the next 4 years, including the number three overall pick?
Gonna be honest, we do not spend a lot of time on the Hornets.
So. It's $153 million in total guaranteed salary they have on the books right now.
Oh, that's right, because Batum and, oh, God.
Batum's expiring. Like, they have Rozier. But no. Not for this year. I'm talking combined for the next 4 years.
Okay.
They have $153 million locked up. It is the most barren cap sheet I think I've seen in a long time doing this. So, Jesus. Like...
Yeah, I see what you're saying. They don't need to dump Cody Zeller for financial reasons, per se. Or yeah, I mean, they might want to, but...
Maybe the Warriors can get Nick Batum. Maybe that's coming up next, huh?
Nick Batum screams vet minimum to the Warriors after he gets bought out.
Yeah,
it's classic.
But the resurgence under in the Warriors system. But with that said, let's actually talk about the top prospects here. So on your last mock, you had LaMelo number one. We haven't really spent a lot of time on LaMelo because it's. Unless they're playing like the greatest smokescreen ever, it seems pretty unlikely the Warriors would take LaMelo Ball. Like, he just does not scream a Steve Kerr player to me. So
I totally agree with you on that. And given the fact that the pandemic allowed Steve to watch more tape than
right.
he's ever watched before, I would imagine his voice is going to carry a little bit more weight than what it typically does in a draft process.
Sure.
Can we talk about the Warriors smokescreening the shit out of like everything right now?
So that's I think that's part of the we started kind of talking about like, oh, what the Warriors are going to do. I think a funny part is, and we were talking about this, is we can't. Are they purposely? Because we've talked a lot in the offseason about how they have just leaked a bunch of shit and talked too much. I think now after a few more months of this. It does feel a little bit more like, all right, so they are doing this on purpose. And you do have to give a little credit for that. I mean,
to the smiley stuff.
Literally the worst stuff in the world, right? Just kind of the Warriors playing themselves into that. You would think they learned from that. So maybe this is part of that.
Well, yeah, the smiley one was bad. Like, A, he's not that good. And B, like, everyone... And in the entire league knew that they were taking him at least at 58. And then they had to move up to get him. They're smokescreen. I think it's purposeful smokescreening. I think that they are, I think the whole time they've been just leaking random shit out there. Like, we like Tyrese Halliburton. We think Anthony Edwards can play now. We think that we really like James Wiseman.
I was going to ask you, Wiseman is the one that I can't tell if it's a smoke. I'm inclined to think it's a smoke screen because just from the outside looking in, you're like, oh, well, you know, they have four starters locked in. Of course they want a center, right?
Yeah, it's a perfect one, I think. And then like you hear Onyeka, they like Onyeka Okongwu more than they like James Wiseman is now the thing. Like, I'm sure there's truth to some of this. And, like, right. I'm trying to determine what the truth is by, like, talking to people on the inside and trying to talk to people, like, on the agency side to understand.
Well, a big thing we've got as we talk to a bunch of, people around the team as well. And it seems like there's not really a united voice with the Warriors. Yeah. Like, when you say the Warriors, like, are you talking about Bob Myers, Mike Dunleavy, Steve Kerr, Kirk Lacob, like they all have differing opinions, particularly in a draft where like we're not sitting here with like, you know, okay, Zion's going number one, Ja's going number two, like where it's very obvious the tiers of players. So.
Right. These teams that tend to have people that talk to media, like there are a few of them out there.
Right.
The Warriors are one and that's great. Like, look, I totally appreciate that they're willing to talk to people and not even just from like a like clicks and stories perspective, sure. But like I like talking to smart people, right? So and like learning more and trying to bounce ideas off
things,
right? Like that stuff's great, but you also just have to understand that they don't always, the organizational goals don't always align. Kind of like you said, like the voices within the organization are not always necessarily going to be the organization's
thought. Well, everyone's got their own incentive, right? Like Steve Kerr is a head coach. A head coach's perspective has to do with literally contributing to the next night on the floor, right? Like Steve's probably looking at a lot of these players and going, I mean, are they going to give me 4 years? Because that's how long I think it'll take him to develop or something like that, right? Right. And then meanwhile, like, you know, the front office kind of has, you know, Bob Myers probably thinking from a different perspective. But then you think about Steph, Clay, and Draymond's age and how many years they may have left. Like, it's all a little confusing. So I guess getting into it, do you think that they actually like James Wiseman? Do you think it's a smokescreen? Do you think it's somewhere in the middle? Like, I've seen you put him in your mocks, the Warriors, previously, but on your most recent one, you had Anthony Edwards, which was curious to me. Like, the only thing I know, the only thing I feel confident is they're not going to take LaMelo Ball. That's basically it.
They've also never said anything about Wiseman. I don't think there's been anything ever said between the Warriors and Wiseman, which is kind of funny, I guess.
Oh, no. There was a leak at one point that the Warriors like Wiseman. Like, that was absolutely 100% a thing that happened. 100% a thing that happened. I guess it
didn't last long, and it was a long time ago.
Right. Like, I linked to it in my story. Like, that was the whole thing. It's just like, look, they're just throwing shit at the wall right now. And that's great. Like, I don't mean that negatively.
Yeah. Well, he was, if I remember correctly, if he wasn't the first prospect, he was one of the first prospects that, like, the whole contingency went to see in person. And I guess a good thing he did, because he only played 3 games. But, yeah, they had, like,
it was 10 years ago.
I mean, seriously, it was almost a year ago at this point. But, yeah, it was the first time we got, like, reports of, like, not just – a scout, you know, Bob Myers, Joe Lacob, anytime the owner's there, and we know the owner in this case is involved, but, you know, it was one of the first ones. I just still don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, so anytime that I've mocked James Wiseman to the Warriors, I've just written, look, James Wiseman's going to go somewhere in the top five, and the Warriors, I think, are pretty likely to trade this pick. So, here.
Yeah. So can you talk to us about James Wiseman? Because, like, he
James
is
Wiseman's good. Like, I just want to mention that.
Yeah, let me start here. He is the player who we get the most comments about, just in terms of Warrior fans. And it's for the obvious reason. You know, like, they have a starting point guard, shooting guard, you know, power forward, whatever. And and then secondarily, he just has elite physical measurements. You watch one Instagram highlight, you're like, oh, wow, that's a very athletic giant human, right? So, but then beyond that, like, no one's seen him play, right? Like, I watched two of those games at the beginning of the season, but it's like, I mean, he was playing against guys who probably won't even play in, like, lower professional leagues. So it's not like I remember watching those games. I was like, he's playing against guys who look like high school players for the most part. So
for sure, I think one of those games was like UIC or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. But anyway, with that said, like, give us a rundown of where you're at with him as a prospect, what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are.
Yeah, I think he's going to be really good. He is 7'1" with like a 7'6" wingspan, moves really well in short spaces. I worry about him. Like, I don't think he can switch, like, out on the perimeter defensively. I think you're going to play him in a drop scheme, just straight up.
So more Rudy Gobert than, like, I'm obviously talking, like, best case, but more like that type of, like,
an Anthony Davis
rim protector than,
it's more
force.
The guy that I've been comparing him to is like Miles Turner. Almost.
Okay.
I think that he is probably more vertically explosive. He's a little bit taller than Miles as well.
Right.
I think he's going to be a little bit better as a rim protector than Miles. I think he's going to be much better as a rim runner than Miles is. But similarly, has the capacity to be a pick and pop guy, has the capacity to be a, made probably more of a trailer three guy because his vertical gravity is so real that you almost always want to roll him to the rim.
Right.
Now, where I worry a little bit about him is that he's never really shown anything passing wise, like at any level, realistically. He at lower levels, and like I've asked him and talked to him about this before, he told me like he saw himself as more of like a Giannis or like an Anthony Davis who could create like from the mid post and do stuff. And
yeah, I see him too. I see it too.
What's a video he just put out on Instagram where he's like trying to show
it when somebody wants to trade for this.
Yeah.
I see it when somebody wants to trade for the second pick, but sorry, Sam, go ahead.
It seems like he's gotten better at that messaging, at least, that he's going into it more, accentuating his play finishing abilities. I think of him more as an elite level play finisher who is going to be a great rim protector, who you're going to have to play in a drop, or maybe even like you could probably do some similar stuff that Denver does with Nikola Jokic, right? Where they play flat and have him recover backward and everything. Like you're going to be able, he's not like totally non-versatile in the way that someone like Brook Lopez is, where Milwaukee has to play this aggressive drop and
they don't really have another option. It's not like he can do anything else defensively.
Right. And to me, like an enormous part of like winning in the playoffs is being able to do different things defensively.
So what I think then, I guess that's fine. I think the defense and then the rim running, I think you can also get maybe like 80% of that with someone later on in the draft, or really just anybody with like a minimum. How about the shooting and the handle? Like, is there enough there outside? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't love the handle. I don't really see that as being a thing. I don't see him as like a guy that you toss the ball to 18 feet from the basket and like you ask him, hey, create on an island against this, even like 7-footer, right? He has enough body control and fluidity to where, like similarly to Miles Turner, right? Like you watch that Pacers series even against Miami where he's going up against Bam Adebayo. Like if Bam comes out super heavy on a closeout, like Miles can put the ball on the deck now and attack a closeout in a straight line and finish. Like, I think that's more what you're looking at. I think he'll be able to do that at a reasonable level, but I don't really see him as a guy who's going to be like a play creator. I see him averaging like 17 points a game and, you know, maybe 11 rebounds and being a top 5 center defender. But, you know, it's, how
I mean, you're making a you're still making a good sales pitch, in my opinion.
No, I know.
I think that's actually I like the Miles Turner comp because who was it? Chris Bosh was a player who kept getting thrown around, and like the little I watch of him, I'm like, you know, I guess like there's a similar fluidity to their athleticism, but I really don't see it in any other way.
Chris Bosh could drop 30 in today's NBA. He could get average 30.
I mean, Chris
almost averaged 30 in that NBA.
Yeah, like, he's just phenomenal. If he wasn't playing literally LeBron, he literally only played
two seasons where he was shooting the three, too. That's a funny thing. Like, he never even really expanded that far.
Yeah, like, I think Chris Bosh is quicker twitch than what James was.
Right.
That's why I don't really see it there.
But James, James is also just bigger. From what I can tell, is that correct?
Yeah. He's like fucking DeAndre Jordan size. Like DeAndre has gotten bigger and more jacked and like thicker throughout the course of his career, and I hope that James can do that. But like that's more the comparison to me, is that he can be like DeAndre Jordan with the ability to shoot, which is essentially like a slightly better version of Miles Turner.
Yeah, I mean, so. The fact he isn't versatile defensively would scare me only if they were passing on someone who, better.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it in the context of this. If you're telling me you can get a good rim protector who can give you, in the Warriors system, could give you like 15 to 20 points once they figure everything out, and maybe you don't play them at the close of games, whatever, that's fine by me. You know, it's like the only reason that would upset me is if they passed on like Jason Tatum for him or something, right? Something where it's like obvious you're missing on that. But with that said, I guess the secondary question,
obvious Tatum was, but
yeah. No, he wasn't. But you get what I'm saying. Like the only reason passing on a player like Wiseman would upset me is if it was because someone better was after him.
I mean, I'll say this. There's no, like, I really liked Jason Tatum, right? And I had him at number two and thought the Lakers should have taken him, right? Like, but there's not that guy in this class. Like, I don't have any of these big wings, anything similar to Jason Tatum in this class in terms of grades. So to speak to that, Sam, I totally agree with you that they're not passing. At number two, they could be passing on Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball, both of whom have ridiculous upside. And if it works out for them developmentally, could be something real. But right. That becomes complicated, I think.
Let me ask you this. Wiseman or DeAndre Ayton? Compare those two. Compare them as prospects.
So, I had DeAndre and Luka in the same tier. I had DeAndre at one, so I fucked that up. I don't know that I would have taken DeAndre at one in every circumstance. Like, I think it was team by team. I didn't really have a problem with Phoenix taking him number one.
Okay. I think also was just everyone knew Phoenix wanted to take him, that no one even bothered to go through the thought exercise of who to take there.
Yeah, I did. I still just was wrong. Right at the end of the day, like,
fuck. Well, hey, right? Own it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, it's fine. I thought that Sacramento should have taken Luka at number two, which I think the rest of the world other than Vlade Divac did. But, like, you know, what can you do? In regard to DeAndre versus James, from what I've been told, James is more – it's not to say DeAndre doesn't take coaching. He does. He's great. Like, he's not a bad kid at all. He's, like, a really great kid from what I gather. James is more able to implement what coaches tell him into, like, a functional capacity that works on the court, right? Like, he's kind of like a sponge. A, he's super fucking smart. He had, like, a 3.8 GPA in his first semester at Memphis. He's
if he wears a suit to his interview, the Warriors are going to pick him. Not even a question.
Like, very, very smart guy. Very intelligent human being. Definitely listens to coaches, can take that Steve coaching
Kerr's gonna and love that.
Implement it. Now, again, though, this is what people said about Damian Jones, right? Like, I mean,
I was all in and you had to.
What is that?
He's better than he's just a better basketball player than Damian Jones. Like,
no, but I hear what you're saying. Being coachable doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be good. Just right. means you're coachable.
Right.
Aaron, but like, Aaron Kraft I think is coachable.
That, right. Like, this is what we, and by the way, I love that you shouted out Aaron Kraft. Shout out Aaron Kraft. Go Buckeyes. I just kind of use that to say, like, he is a better, I hear better reports about his work ethic and his ability to implement coaching than I do with DeAndre. I think DeAndre had more natural skill at the end of the day. And, like, he's just a physical fucking beast, DeAndre.
I think
like 2010 coming out, just walking out.
Friend,
no warm up.
That's Jaleel. That's not DeAndre.
I can't steal this take, but a friend of all of ours, Ethan Strauss, throughout the he said he thought Ayton has more offensive upside and Wiseman has more defensive upside.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
I mean, like, look, how much has Ethan watched James? Like, other than those, like, five games.
You know Ethan just makes shit up. You know Ethan.
Right? Like, I've seen James at the Adidas championships in it was before his senior year. I saw him at McDonald's. I saw him at Hoop Summit. Watched all those games that we saw this year, and I saw him at something else too. I'll have to go back through my notes. But I've seen James along with NBA scouts. Like, James is not a mystery to people, right? Like, he's a mystery to the public because the public doesn't have this sample to go back and watch. But James has been seen for fucking 40 hours, 60 hours from NBA scouts. So I'm not as worried about, like, the mystery that is James Wiseman. Like, scouts
are the Warriors then? they're not worried then if they've seen it that much. They've probably had that decision made at least I'm sure everybody has made a different decision on it, but their thing is not, we haven't seen James Wiseman.
Right. Like, I don't think they're going to be like, we haven't seen James Wiseman ever. We need him to come in for a workout. They might be like, no one has seen James Wiseman for 10 months.
Right.
We would like to see how his game has grown in those 10 months and have him in.
See if he's put on muscle. Hopefully.
So I want to think about this philosophically, Sam. Do you think that the Warriors are looking at this from, because I
don't know. The answer is going to be I don't know, but continue.
No, because Spendi's always saying like, hey, like, you know, they don't care about bigs too much. But then part of it's like, well, you're also Draymond Green's only got a certain amount of years left. A lot of Warriors fans online love the wings. We'll get to this later, but they love the wings. They need Devin Vassell.
On the flip side, literally every Warrior fan who's not on Twitter thinks they need a big more than anything.
So
like, you turn on the radio and all it is like the quest to find the next Wilt Chamberlain. That's all they care about anyway.
Yeah, that's not the way the game's going. But like, no. Yeah, no, it's hard to say. Like, I don't know that the front office feels like they need to put real assets into the big position. Having said that, like Steve Kerr likes bigs, right? Like he likes having that option, right? The best thing that I think any team at the top of this draft could do straight up is marginally trade down. Like, trade number 2 for number 3 in Cody Zeller. Trade number 3 for number 5 and something else. Trade number 5 for number 8 and something else. Like, even if you're just picking up these little wins every time, take advantage of teams being willing to jump for players that, you know, they're all pretty close to the same tier in the top 8.
Right. There's no, like I've said before, there's no like Zion that you're trading down from or something like that. I wanted to ask you then, this is something we wanted to talk about. So who would you define as like, if the Warriors were to trade down, not little, let's say we're talking about them trading down to anywhere between 10 to 15, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Players they could be targeting then. Obviously, if they're going to trade down that many spots, you'd hope they're getting someone who can help them in some capacity immediately. But
by the way, Vassini has all wings in 10 to 15, by the way.
Right.
Yeah.
On his board, at least.
And we have heard that they like Devin Vassell, and particularly Sadiq Bey has been the name I've heard more often than not with the Warriors. But with that said, those are all players you've consistently had mocked in that range. So I guess I want to ask you, if they do trade down to that range, who are the players there? What kind of upside are we really talking about?
Yeah, I think those guys are mostly role players that can be like, you know, fourth or fifth starters, right? Like, I don't really see, like, I don't think Sadiq Bey has the burst to be like a shot creator, okay, right? He's good, really great shooter, has the ability to attack closeouts. He's a really good passer off of closeouts. Like, he's going to be awesome in that role where he spots up in the corner. Guy comes out super heavy. He takes two dribbles and he finds the right guy when the defense scrambles to help on him before he finishes the basket, right? Devin Vassell, I don't think has a great pull-up game. Like, I think that it's going to be a struggle for him to translate that jumper, which has this very elongated release at the top, into non-contested pull-up jumpers, because it's just hard to have that long of a release off of your pull-up,
right,
and not have shots get contested by the length and the recovery speed that happens in today's NBA.
Right. I mean, that's kind of the big thing with Steph and Clay, is like the releases are so quick. So we're talking about the opposite thing there, where it's like, well, if it takes you 5 seconds to get a shot off.
Slower than Jordan Poole, though?
Five is an exaggeration. But yeah, if it takes you forever to get a shot off, an NBA defender will get up there.
I heard that, Andy. That's
nope, nobody has a slow release. You just say that's a sad. Yeah, well, every time to watch Jordan Poole, not only is it slow, it doesn't go in. So.
That's
it. Might go. Problem. It might go in if it was quicker though.
Yeah, like I have Isaac Okoro at the top of this group because, and I think I would have, like, I had him below Kyra Lewis in my last one. I think I'd have him ahead of Kyra. Like that's the next tier for me though. Yeah. It was like Okoro, Kyra Lewis, Vassell, Sadiq Bey, Patrick Williams, like all these guys, right?
Can I ask Okoro you about Patrick?
Can't shoot, so like that's a problem.
I wanted
the
to
Warriors.
I was gonna say it's not a close shot either. I've watched his shot enough to be like it's gonna take a lot of work to get that shot functional.
So yeah, Okoro's one of those guys who shoots better off the dribble than off the catch. Because he has whenever he catches it, he has an exaggerated ball dip to get himself into rhythm.
Right.
But it looks all funky because it actually takes him kind of out of rhythm, to be honest. But whenever he's taking a pull-up jumper, the ball is starting from down lower already, so the ball dip goes away and it's just going up in rhythm with the shot. Right. So in the case of someone like Isaac Okoro, there are some teams that think like he has a chance to get to like a league average shooter. Like he's never going to be like a super high leverage like creator.
You're talking, when you say league average, are we talking like Marcus Smart, like occasionally just 35. Drills six shots, but like is going to live at about 35%?
Yeah, like you're talking like living like 35%.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty good.
Which is fun. Like for everything else that he brings, like 35 yep. would be fucking great, right? Like that guy is a great high-level starter if he's shooting 35% from three, given everything else he brings to the table. But Patrick Williams, you said, Sam, right?
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you about Patrick Williams. And, well, let's just go there. He's Brad a name.
Likes him.
Yeah, he's a name who, I'm going to be honest, like the Florida State games I watched, he was not – you know, I didn't catch his best games. I've got months now to catch up on those good games. But like,
you're not Sam. We're not watching Florida State reruns during a pandemic. All right.
Yeah, I was gonna say like, fuck guys. Like I've read like 15 books. Like I've watched a shit ton of movies. Like even I'm not going back and watching like 40 Florida State.
Love of the games. Love of the game.
like, anyway,
like I'm going back and watch some, but like I'm not sitting here even going back to that well.
Amazing.
Well, we all can't be as bored as I am. with that said, he is someone that like, you know, draft Twitter geeks out over as like highest upside. Yeah. Can you talk to us about where he is right now and then what you see upside wise with him?
So I think he's gonna get taken in the lottery. I will tell you that. Okay. He's enormous. That's just like the first thing you have to mention. He is 6'8", but like when you watch him, he looks like he has fucking boulders on his shoulders, right? Like his frame is going to fill out. He's going to be 240 pounds, like jacked and have no problem. Like people aren't going to be able to move this dude.
I like how you have him going to the Spurs because someone compared him to Kawhi, which in general you should just not be comparing players to MVP candidates. But
yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. Like I had multiple college coaches be like, yeah, like that's what it is. Like it's similar to that.
Okay.
So it's not even just like fans doing it. Like they're just like, yeah, like this guy's frame, he's going to have that kind of strength in terms of that. Now, thing with us went from being a 29% fucking 3-point shooter who couldn't shoot at San Diego State to totally revamping
to Michael Jordan from the mid-range. Yeah.
Yeah, with Chip Englund over the course of a lockout, basically. So like, yeah, it's hard, I think, to compare. You just kind of have to understand that like people are talking pieces of guys' games, right? Whenever they bring these comparisons. So yeah, enormous. He's going to be so strong to where guys just can't move him. I think he's going to be a really good defender because of that. He played, if you go back and watch AAU tape, and like I have like synergy, so like it's easier for me to do this, right? But like you go back and watch the AAU tape and you see a guy that played like point forward for his AAU team and like could grab and go and do some stuff on the break and could pass on the move in open spaces. And like, you look at it and you're like, okay, at Florida State, the floor was as condensed as possible. He didn't really get a chance to show this stuff off the drive.
Florida State, not big on shooting, are they? I just run.
No, like they're great. Like that staff does an incredible job and they develop guys to be great pros. But yeah, I mean, it's not like the most modern offense in the world, right?
Sure.
So I think scouts are searching, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's part of this. Like
they see what they see, like the best case scenario with him.
Yeah.
Is what you're getting at. Like they're got the physical profile.
Well, they're trying to do that with everyone, right? Like they're trying to see like, okay, if this shit all goes right, what is the upside? Well, Patrick Williams, like he's like a blank canvas. You can just say like, oh yeah, we can make this guy who's this big, strong dude, make him Kawhi Leonard, right? Like that's
well, I feel like that's a lot of this draft. Is maybe it's just because Sam and I have been talking about this draft for a year, which we have never done.
I'm so sorry.
Years podcast, but no, it's just it feels like, I don't know if this is how it is in every draft. It just feels like this is the kind of draft where a lot of people are just really projecting different things on, and you can do it a million ways, or you're really just having to try to do that because there's not much there. Like we just talked about James Wiseman for 26 minutes and we just have no idea. Like it feels like we're just kind of pushing things onto him. Cause it's like, what else are we supposed to do here? What else can we do?
Well, like I've seen James Wiseman a lot, like in my life, like I've watched him play a lot of games in person, like with my two eyes. And I think he's going to be really good. And like, I think I have a pretty good feel for where he's at, but like, put it this way, like I had an NBA, like, director of player personnel asked me, who would you take, Mitchell Robinson or James Wiseman? And I was just like, probably James, but it's close.
Huh. Okay.
And then you hear in our Light Years Discord chat where people want to trade the second pick for Mitchell Robinson. So I guess it just keeps going around and around.
Yeah. Like it's all the same name. Circle, right? Like,
Mitchell Robinson. I think Mitchell Robinson is one of those guys where he's really good in theory also, because he's like, wow, you didn't know he was actually going to be that good. And then it becomes one of the things where it's like, well, I don't know how much SI he actually has if you're comparing it to a guy who's supposed to be a top three pick like James Wiseman. But
I'm only like sort of exaggerating, but Mitchell Robinson's had like 72 agents. Like, I mean, like, we haven't seen him play in, like, a high-leverage situation yet. Yeah. Like,
it's like one of those things.
And his upside
is anyone who does – who plays three good games in a row for the Knicks just tends to be overblown.
Hey, Jeremy Lin. We're not overblown, Jeremy Lin. All right, let me do a couple reads, and we'll get back. We'll get back to it. Sundays are coming back in the NFL. With NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live out-of-market NFL game. Oh, it's actually back this Thursday. Every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, Red Zone plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels, never miss your favorite teams and favorite players, no matter where you live. And NFL SundayTicket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. So use promo code BlueWire at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFL SundayTicket.tv. Use promo code BlueWire. All right, we got one more. We got DoorDash. So you've always counted on restaurants, now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open up the app, choose what you want, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Or do what Sam and I do, order from many of your favorite local restaurants. They're open for delivery too. Just open the app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on the way. So right now, $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app, enter the code BlueWire. That's $5 off your first order and zero delivery fees. Promo code BlueWire, don't forget, that's promo code BlueWire for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Whew. All right, Sam. One quick Patrick Williams question, and then I want to change. So you're not as bullish on him as other people. I take it. You think he'll be a good defender, but you don't think there's star upside there.
I mean, there's star upside there, but it's okay. Like it's a long ways away. Like it's like years away from being realized. I mean, he's very young. He's like 18 still, if I remember correctly. I think he turns 18.
Yeah, he's one of the youngest guys in the draft. So that also works in his
19.
That also works in his favor. Like,
well, yeah, and I don't mean this disparagingly because, like, look, I'm glad that people care about the draft, but like, a lot of the draft coverage I read is like out of context about like where these guys come from and like what their development process is and like
right.
where they've come and like, you know, what the system that they're playing in is. Like a lot of it is just like numbers and okay, we're going to plug this numbers into a guy that's 18 years old and, you know, we're going to say linear growth trajectory and this is where it's at. Right. And that's just not how it works. Right. It's like with Obi Toppin. Like Obi Toppin's gotten better 6 years in a row of his life. Like he has gotten drastically better for six straight years. I personally don't really see a reason to believe that Obi Toppin is going to like stagnate right now based off of the fact that why would we think a guy who has gotten better for six straight years,
right.
why would we think that guy is like not still getting better?
That's a great point. A lot of the times I don't think any, because we don't know, people just don't know these players right. at all. And it's like you draft someone like Klay Thompson is a great example. Draymond Green is that. You look at those guys, I think most people probably come out and say like Draymond Green's probably topped out. Even Klay Thompson's like
right.
kind of topped out. Like even Steph Curry. But I mean you look at those guys, they've really reached the peak. And maybe it's someone like Patrick Williams where people don't know where it's like maybe the guy just, or Anthony Edwards, where you hear some things where it's like maybe the guy just doesn't care as much about basketball as the rest of the guys, maybe like Obi Toppin, what you're saying, who we really haven't talked about Obi Toppin at all because we don't think the Warriors are even looking at him. But I think that's a great point because a lot of people, Obi Toppin, think like that's probably it for him, right? Like he's an older guy. He's going to come into the league. He'll be like maybe.
Yeah, I think the point you're getting at is right? there's a perceived lack of upside. It's easier. Like Patrick Williams, for lack of a better term, is a mystery box, right? Like
yeah, he could be any,
he could be anything.
Coaches.
Yeah, exactly. So you get why that's exciting. Although I would kind of caution fans, was like, I don't think you're ready to watch the 200 games it takes him to get there. So, cause that's usually what it is. Everyone's like with like draft or like, I think this guy will be the best. It's like the guy who drafts him might be fired before he realizes that. So,
ooh. And you're not getting value on the rookie scale deal, which is really right. important as well. Like, with Obi Toppin, I think that like people have drastically underestimated how good Obi Toppin is offensively. He is so fucking good offensively. He is an unbelievable play finisher who can also pass. He can do literally anything that you want a big to do in a pick and roll. He can pick and pop and knock down shots at like a 38% clip. He can short roll and make passes on the move. You can post him and he can make passes off of doubles. You can roll him all the way to the basket. And I think he shot like 70% at the rim this year in half court settings. So like that guy is incredibly valuable on offense. John Collins is still an incredibly valuable NBA basketball player. Like, and John Collins has gotten better defensively now to the point where he's no longer a disaster. And people like kind of, you know, wrote him off early, I think, as, oh, he's a product of Trey. He's not good defensively. Well, you watch him now. He actually can move his feet pretty well defensively. He's typically in the right position, although there are some warts there. And now he's shooting 40% from three, can attack closeouts, and he's like a fucking monster. So I get frustrated when it's just like, oh, Obi Toppin's 22, you know, what he's probably like done and maxed out and, you know, oh, he has stiff hips defensively. Like, look, like I think I'm the first person that talked about the fact that Obi Toppin has stiff hips defensively because I wrote it after I saw him this summer at the Nike Basketball Academy.
Also, like for the Warriors, like isn't 22 a more ideal scenario than 19 anyway? you know, like just the reality of where they're going to be physical maturation wise and like ability to catch up to NBA speed and everything. Right.
Well, and like, imagine how he would mix with Draymond Green offensively.
Right.
Imagine them being able to run out Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Obi Toppin, and whatever fucking wing you want to run out, whatever wing you go and acquire with the trade exception.
Well, right? Andrew Wiggins.
I would hope Andrew Wiggins.
Sure. Honestly, Andrew Wiggins is a good fit with them. Like, yeah. Great. Andrew Wiggins.
He's never going to find a better situation than what he's in right now to right. maximize whatever you perceive his ceiling to be.
Like, imagine being able to run, like, fucking double drags with Stephen Curry, where Obi Toppin and Draymond, both of whom can pass. Draymond Green is probably the best short roll passer of all time. Obi Toppin is a guy that you can pick and pop or roll all the way to the basket for a lob. That's, like, the most dangerous fucking offensive play in the league next year. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
So, let's talk about Obi Toppin here a little bit.
I'm talked in.
His The form on his shot looks good to me. How good of a shooter do you actually think he is?
Yeah, 38% is high.
So he has some bad misses that worry me. He has some times where the release is very quick, and I think that sometimes the ball like comes out of the side of his hand a little bit almost. I think that's going to be fixable. Like, I think he's going to be a good shooter that can knock down above the break threes at a good clip as a pick and pop or spot up guy. I don't think you're going to like run him off of screens like he's Duncan Robinson and he sets his feet and fires.
Right. Okay. But you know, like, I mean, for the Warriors, they just need a big who can pop. They don't need a big who can do what Clay does, you know?
Right. Exactly. And that's why I'm just like, okay, like if I was the Warriors, because when I do my team-specific big board, I will have Obi Toppin probably at 3 for them. I might have him at 2 because the LaMelo Ball idea terrifies me for them.
For a number of reasons.
It terrifies a lot of people.
Like Draymond Green screaming at LaMelo Ball while he wipes his feet when he's supposed to be tagging a pick and roll is something I really want to see.
I do too.
And then
LeVar in the media the following day telling, you know, Draymond to shut up or something, unprovoked. Just yeah.
Like the Draymond LeVar Ball feud where Draymond is going on Inside the NBA and LeVar Ball is on First Take or whatever would be incredible. Like
I can see content. How the next year plays out exactly for the Warriors if they take LaMelo.
How does Obi Toppin work defensively? Sorry, I'm hung up on this, and now I'm really curious. How does that work?
Good question.
Yeah.
So, I think he's going to be a little bit better of a weak side rim protector than what other people do. I think his instincts are fine when he's in recovery. Like, I think the big problem with him is he turns his hips very slowly. He drops his hips very slowly. He just doesn't have a ton of flexibility there. But also, in college, he didn't really try to, like, drop his hips and slide with someone defensively. He was like, I'm the most athletic player on this court. I'm just going to chase in recovery and swat this shit from behind. Like, that's more the style of defense that he played. And yeah, that's bad for an NBA scheme. Like, again, Draymond Green would be furious about the number of, like, broken possessions where they end up in a scramble situation because Obi lets a guy fly by. But, like, I think that he's a – well, first and foremost, he's a great kid. Like, elite-level teammate, elite-level worker. Like,
will he wear a suit to the interview?
I don't know. I will say this. There's a team, I won't say what team it is, that when kids were doing Zoom interviews, there'd be, you know, 10% of the kids would show up in a suit, right? And they would like have the kids stand up
to say and be like, pants.
Are you wearing the pants?
Whoa.
And just that like, we want to see if you go it all out. And it's just like an icebreaker, right? Like, they weren't serious about it.
Oh, right.
They were just like, okay. They weren't like, yeah, like, you need to be wearing suit pants.
I mean, let's be real here. I all of us have done this, right? On a Zoom call, you put on the professional top with like shorts or something. Or you know what I'm saying? Like whatever and you Alex consider. Will
be the only person.
Oh, it's just me?
I got told the one person who wore pants was Robert Woodard. If we're looking for the Warriors trading up to get.
Oh, some. Wow. Okay. That's Larry Riley's guy then for sure. Yeah.
There we go.
Now I got to look up Warriors, who he is as a player, but.
Warriors moving in to number 31 overall, which is their pick that they owned previously that I'm sure Dallas is going to be looking to get off.
I'm like trying to figure out who this is, Sam. I'm like scrolling down your big board right now. All right. So here we go. Mississippi State. All right. 30th pick. I was like, who the hell is he talking about? I mean, he's a wing.
So. I was really hoping it was going to be one of the top five guys just because
those are the
names we've got in our head at this point, you know?
15, I think. I think we're saying we're good with the 15, first 15 guys. We have a quote-unquote solid hold. I got a question for you. I'm watching these playoffs, and we got the Raptors and Celtics coming up. We're recording before the game, who I think top two of the top five developmental kind of you draft guys, Tyler Hero, right, even the Miami Heat, so that's up there too. Do you have an opinion on where the Warriors are in that? Like, are they top 10, 15? In terms of development? Yeah.
It's hard because they don't really – they tend to acquire finished products, right? And they tend to draft at the end of the draft. And frankly,
this regime, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, and like frankly, they draft guys that I don't think are very good. Like,
nice.
Like they drafted Smiley Geach, who I had at like 104 or whatever, and they drafted Jordan Poole in the first round, who I had at 55. So like,
nice.
Part of it is tough.
Did you ever get insight into what they liked about like Jordan Poole or some of these guys who? I mean, it's not just you. It's like they tend to value players who just don't rank highly on anyone's draft board. So
I think I was lower on Poole than most, honestly, which like, you know, I hope he figures it out.
Is that a OSU Michigan thing or
not? God, I wish it was. No, I just didn't like, frankly, I just didn't like it. I really liked Jordan Poole. I think I was the first person to move him up into my top 40. And then like, he sucked the rest of the year. So it was like, okay, this guy is living off of a shooting sample from November to January where they played dog shit teams that like, you know, he's shooting 45%. And it's like, okay, it's like the same with Aaron Naismith, right? Like, and Aaron Naismith, I think, is a better shooter.
Yeah, we forgot that one.
That's literally who I was trying to figure out how I could get to Naismith. So let's do this right now.
So Aaron Naismith is a better shooter than Jordan Poole, like 100%. But Aaron Naismith shot 55% from three this year, 52 or whatever it was, on 115 attempts when Vanderbilt played I think it was like the 310th best like strength of schedule in non-conference. And then he played one SEC game before he got hurt. So his numbers look amazing.
Okay.
But you also have to understand the context of he was playing terrible teams and like just blew up. And like, I like Naismith too. Like I have him at 16 or whatever. And I think that Coles Wicker and I were the first people that like mentioned Naismith on our podcast last year. So, but like at the same time, people are like, oh, he's the best shooter in the draft. And he's like, apparently again, like an elite level kid and a great worker and someone that you can trust to get the most out of his game. But I mean, he's a shooter. And then there's like not a whole lot else there. And if he's not a 44% three-point shooter, it's like, what does he do?
So this is piggybacking Andy's point. One thing, well, I mean, Warrior fans should know this, but like, I mean, you're seeing someone like Tyler Hero who could really shoot the ball, being able to have immediate success. And then like, I don't want to compare them, but like someone like Jordan Poole, for example, that shot's just not translating. They both shot the same percentages in college. So it's a big thing that I'm trying to work out here because like you look at, you know, a lot of guys' numbers, watching YouTube highlights is pointless because it's always going to be a compilation of their best highlights. Right. Like yeah. it doesn't give you any sort of picture other than like just get a feel of how they move. Naismith interests me because of his jump shot, because more than anything, since the Warriors picked Klay Thompson, it's like they've had an aversion to shooting, or they don't know how to scout shooting, or I don't know what it is.
Develop shooting.
Yeah. And it's like, I understand like part of it is like they have two of the greatest shooters of all time and they want to put guys who know how to pass around them to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, they kind of divulge.
The other part of it is there, I think, that they kind of thought for a while, and they've said this publicly, that they wanted to take advantage of what they felt were distressed assets.
Right.
Because, you know, teams thought these guys couldn't shoot when they could do other things better. Right. Like they were light years again. Right?
Sean Livingston's a prime example. Right.
Right.
So
they were trying to light years like roster development again, basically with this and zigging while the rest of the league is zagging, which didn't work. Right. Like it's fine. It's
cool. I mean, it works if you identify Andre Iguodala, but I don't know that I call Andre Iguodala a distressed asset either.
Well, I think it's also because I say that because you bring up Obi Toppin, where I think he gets to where he needs to get to quicker than, let's say, you draft Patrick Williams, where you're just expecting or you're trusting the Warriors developmental. Now, you put Patrick Williams on the Miami Heat. He's fucking Kawhi Leonard. Sure. But you put Patrick Williams on the Warriors, I have no idea what Patrick Williams might be.
Well, I think that has more to do with if Pat Riley or Greg Popovich draft Patrick Williams, you give them the benefit of the doubt that they saw something more so than you're willing to give Bob Myers based on the last handful of – yeah, I mean all the names I'm saying are just standing. Yeah.
Let's be real about it. Post-Travis Schlenk.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Since Schlenk has left, they're kind of – I don't have a ton of – the biggest case to trade the pick is, like, I don't know that they'll make the right decision anyway. So.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree, to be honest, unfortunately.
The other argument is obviously the window. That they're in a unique situation in that regard.
Yeah, this is a good opportunity. They should use one of these two picks that they have, because I think this Timberwolves pick is going to be pretty high next year, frankly. Minnesota will say that they have every incentive to be good now because they have Karl Towns and because they have D'Angelo Russell and because they don't have their pick
next year, yeah.
Like, I think they will probably try to be good next year, but I also think that they're building more for, like, 2022-23 when they actually have to make a decision on Towns, right? Like, they want to – next year doesn't matter for Minnesota, frankly. Like, it just doesn't. They still have Karl Towns for three more years after Minnesota – or after next year. You don't really have to get into a situation where you're trading him, but they have so many assets this year to, like, move around and do stuff with that this is the summer where, like, they need to make decisions, right? Or at least stay flexible enough to make, you know, high-level asset decisions, right? So in the case of the Warriors, I don't know what they're going to do. Like, at any time that I'm mocking the Warriors – and not like I mean mock drafting, not making fun of.
No, we do that. It's for us to do.
Like, I do it with the belief that their best move would be to either trade down or trade out of this draft.
Okay.
With a team that values certain guys in this draft. Honestly, I feel that way, like, for most teams in this draft. Like, if I was Charlotte, I think should use this pick, because this is Charlotte's opportunity to get a super high upside player into a developmental scheme that has been working the last few years and into a roster that just desperately needs upside. If I was Chicago, I'd probably try and move the pick. If I was the Cavs, even, where I'm in asset accumulation mode, I would still be trying to move this pick. So, like, maybe this is me just not being particularly high on this draft, and or the highest, the high end of this draft. Like I want right. picks from 20 to 45 in this draft because I think there's real depth. But I would be very comfortable moving this number two pick for something. Like someone threw me, if the Heat would do Duncan Robinson for number two, would I do that? Or like Duncan Robinson and number 20 for number two.
I made the I said I would have I'd trade the number two pick for Tyler Hero. And that
Oh yeah, Miami went. I'm so disgusted, by the way, that you just said that. Duncan Robinson, who Miami picked up from a D3, from D3, developed him into who he is today and get a number. It makes me sick to my stomach. That's well, how good the Miami Heat are.
The hilarious thing is, like, we want to talk about John Beilein being, like, a great coach. Like, John right. Beilein brought him off the bench at Michigan. Think about that.
Jordan Poole started, though.
Yeah, he started Jordan Poole over Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know, man. It's funny how those things work out. Can I ask you this on Aaron Naismith, though? Do you see defensive upside with him?
Versatile guy who can take on a lot of assignments and probably not do it like at a super high level.
I'm going to use Buddy Hield as a comp for him. Where does defensively more upside, more realistic?
He's bigger and stronger and longer, so better. Sure.
Right.
But like not that level of shooter, I don't think.
Yeah,
Buddy
so.
Is like Aaron Naismith's great coming off of screens and great at, you know,
well, that's why the comp comes. I didn't want to compare him to Clay, but like there is. I was thinking about it watching the Milwaukee games where it's just like I don't think any of their players can come off of a screen other than Kyle Korver, and he's 50. You know, like there's a finite number of guys in the NBA who can really shoot. Off while moving off ball. Like most guys who we define as shooters are if they're spotting up, standing still. And I think, I mean, the Warriors know better than anyone. There's a lot of value in a guy who can move off ball and shoot.
And by the way, like Buddy is just fine coming off of like down screens and pin downs.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's like, great at it. Yeah.
Well, I don't even know that he's great at it. He's fine at it. He's where he's like fucking elite and exceptional is what like Stephen Curry and Fred VanVleet are, like relocating off of crazy like
scrambles. Fred VanVleet, that's gonna be a rich man.
He's gonna be very rich. I think.
I get excited million. When I hear. Yeah, he's amazing.
But that's where I think Buddy's like superpower is like knowing when and how to relocate off of offensive rebounds or off of. You know, broken plays where his man decides to stupidly double for some reason.
Right.
And he's just like, oh shit, like I can relocate and just like.
Why are you helping off of the one guy who can shoot? Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's not to say like he's bad coming off of screens, but he's just like fine at it. Like Fred VanVleet is fine at coming off of screens. He's an elite level relocation guy.
Right.
And honestly, like, there are just so many offensive schemes in today's NBA where like they just frankly don't prioritize off-ball movement. Like the Lakers aren't doing anything complicated in terms of off-ball, like, you know, screen setting, right?
But we know the Warriors will, which is why that's specifically my question with someone like Naismith, that like does he hold even more value to them? Because is there anyone in the top 15 you have mocked here who would be defined as someone who works well off ball?
Oh, who works well off ball?
Not Anthony Edwards, probably.
Not Edwards, not Killian.
No,
Haynes.
I wouldn't have Edwards
there. Not LaMelo Ball. Maybe Denny Avdija.
Maybe Devin Vassell.
Halliburton is sneaky really good at moving off ball.
of course.
He's really smart at knowing where the open spaces are and knowing where to be. The shot takes 94 seconds to get off.
Right.
But if he gets it off, he's pretty effective. Like he shoots like 40% from three because he has great touch and, you know, it just kind of works. But he's pretty good at it. Let's see. Denny's okay at it.
Denny's more of a point forward, right? Like
he is more of a point forward, but they play him. You know, if you go back and watch like earlier this season, like, he wasn't in the same role that he was whenever they came back from coronavirus pandemic, right? Like, they basically gave him the ball and were like, go after that. But earlier in the season, they played him a lot more off ball, and it was a little bit more interesting. I would say no. I think Naismith probably is the best mover off the ball of those guys. I'd say he's probably the best at it in this class, probably. Another guy that's really good at it is Tyrell Terry.
That's a
relocation stuff,
shout out Stanford, local kid. I'm surprised the Warriors are actually, if they're smoke screening, that's a player they would smoke screen for. We know they love Stanford. And I mean, he's just good. He's just a good college player, period.
Yeah. I like Tyrell. Great kid. Like really, really fucking smart, really smart kid. Great at relocating, underrated passer. Like you watch him at Stanford this year. There wasn't a ton of like live dribble passing ability. Like it kind of wasn't their offense. And also he's not great at it right now. Like I think his handle's not very good, frankly, because he's just not super strong on the ball yet, because he's 160 pounds. And as soon as you make contact with him, he like, it kind of abrupts his momentum.
Sounds like college Steph Curry.
The thing is that I was going to bring up the relocation shooting. Like he does a lot of the same like relocation shooting that Steph does.
And he can
get open threes. He's an elite level shooter. I really like Tyrell. I think that some of the hype where like people have him in the lottery, I think that's a little high given where his shooting ability or given where his ball handling ability is right now. Like with Steph was a fucking elite level ball handler.
Right. He was just weak physically. He needed to get stronger.
Right. Like Tyrell is a good passer out in the open break. He sees everything. Like he's great understanding the second and third level, but I don't see that level of like dynamic ball handling that.
Right.
Like a lot of,
so
like
maybe Seth, maybe Seth Curry. Then.
Maybe Seth. The funny thing is, like realizing this now, I've been comparing him to Steve Kerr, like as a basketball player.
All right.
I think that's more who Tyrell is. And that's like a totally really valuable player, I think.
I just wonder, because we go through this every year, watching the playoffs, you see the value of shooting and versatility defensively. Yeah. And then draft time comes around, and I feel like we still kind of, I don't want to say they get underrated, but it still feels like a lot of draft scouting is building for how the game was 10 years ago. Like,
well, it's funny. Like, I think about that a lot. Like, I thought about that a lot yesterday while watching the Heat Bucks, right? And like with my job particularly, like I have to evaluate guys for different schemes. Like Portland playing this aggressive drop coverage is not going to have the same big board as Golden State, right?
Sure.
And trying to figure out how to do a big board whenever I'm accounting for 30 teams' schemes, basically, because I have to. Right. Like otherwise, like if I was only accounting for like, you know, super switchy schemes, like I'd have James Wiseman at like fucking 30. Right. Or I'd have Isaiah Stewart, who I think is going to be a valuable player in some scheme, at like 70 or something. But I think about it in the context of how I would build a roster if I was running a team. And I'd be like fucking switching everything. Like I'd be building what Miami has built, basically. I'd be building what Golden State built along, like, you know, during their crazy run.
Right, right.
So like it's hard. Like when I say I like James Wiseman at 4, like would I take James Wiseman at 4 if I was running a team? No, because I think that my strategy and like the coaches that I would hire would play similarly to Miami, where it'd be like a super aggressive, versatile defense, or similar to Toronto, where it's like a wildly variant defense and doing a lot of different things. But it's complicated. Like it's really fucking complicated, my job, versus if I was just working for a team, it'd be like, okay, yeah, I just want to do
this. And like, I mean, when you make your mocks, how much are you considering what teams will do? Yeah. Like I assume your board of like, if you were God and didn't have to consider anything, any team would do is different than what you put as the big board. Correct.
It is like what I would do is drastically different even from what I release as my big board, like personal ranking.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
That's what I'm trying to get at. Like, yeah, because you have Anthony Edwards in the top two. That's because you know he's going to go in the top two. It's not about like what you particularly think.
Well, and like a part of my job is giving a semblance of where the league is as a whole on guys. Part of my job is also just like me evaluating these guys and coming up with conclusions, right? Like I need to be able to do that, frankly. But like the way that I would build a team is different from the way that the Bucks have chosen to build their team. And that's not...
Well, I think everyone's there right now.
But no, like that's not to say that the Bucks haven't been successful in the way they've built. Like they've built an incredible situation. They've built an incredible team. And like I'm not saying that what they've done is wrong, even necessarily.
Right.
But it's just different from what I would do. And I think that that's what makes my, like what I release is like my thoughts very complicated, basically.
Okay. No, it makes all sense. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Andy.
Do you have a 2021 big board ready to go yet?
That's how
I kind of want to end this pod. Is that too far away? Is it like a?
I wanted to hit on Anthony Edwards too before we got out of here, but go for it.
Let's go, Anthony Edwards first. Or did you, Sam? You want to talk about the big?
No, let's do Anthony Edwards.
All right.
Yeah, because I mean he's the only player who's in serious play for the Warriors pick that we haven't discussed, and it just
I think he also is the guy. Yeah, they'll begrudgingly take. Like I don't think they'll
if they don't get their trade down. They don't trade down,
yeah. Yeah.
If he's there too, like he'll be in the mix for Minnesota at number one and for whoever is potentially gets that pick. So
like I think he's the most likely of these like top five guys that'll be in a Warriors uniform. Like
I mean I have him mocked there now. I believe I have him mocked there now, right?
Yeah, I do. You do. I'm all at one. Interesting. Yeah, but
incredible talent level, incredible explosiveness. Incredible burst off of first step. Really can leap and finish, even in the half court. Very comfortable getting to step backs. Very fluid getting to step backs.
But can he make the step backs?
What did you say?
But can he make the step back?
Yeah, that's a question. can he make it at a level commensurate with where he has to make it is the question.
Right, yeah.
Right, like... He can make them. He has to make them at a 36% clip for it to be valuable. I like the idea of Anthony Edwards.
Everyone likes the idea of him. They also love the idea of Andrew Wiggins.
Deep sigh. Yeah. Vassini's deep sigh there killed me.
I like the idea. I want to like Anthony Edwards. There's a world where he becomes like a hybrid of Victor Oladipo and Bradley Beal. Like there really is.
Whew.
So I mean that's positive.
Yeah. And I mean it in regard to like he's that level like Victor Oladipo athlete.
Right.
He is potentially with the way that he gets to his step back. In terms of his footwork, in terms of his deceleration, in terms of the way that defenders have to actually play his acceleration going forward off of his first step. Like, his body mechanics allow him to create separation in a way that elite level pull-up
shooters... you're making him sound like James Harden. The way you're wording it.
I mean, he's not like that's the reason I said like hybrid between Oladipo and like Brad Beal, right? But he doesn't make them at a level commensurate. Like, do you believe that he can make shots is what it comes down to. Do you believe he's going to get better as a shooter? I don't know. Like, I don't have the answer to that.
I was kind of hitting on this with my questions at Naismith and then a little bit with Tyler Hero and some of the other stuff. But like, a lot of these prospects comes down to your belief in them being able to hit shots. Like Wiseman, even.
Yeah.
If Wiseman can't hit shots, you pretty much describe he's just DeAndre Jordan, right?
Yeah.
In which case, it's like, that's not very exciting in the top five or anything, right? But if he can hit shots, even if he is flawed in many other ways. I would take
DeAndre Jordan in the top five of this draft.
Okay, that just speaks to where we're at.
It's a sad, sad.
But yeah.
If I was running a specific scheme, that is. If I was running a scheme where I was playing drop, I would take DeAndre Jordan in at five.
Okay, but let's
pull it back. I wouldn't do that, but like, you know.
Let's pull it back to Anthony Edwards here, though. He's a guy who fits in exactly like everything we're talking about. If the shot comes around, I have all the faith in the world that Steve Kerr and that coaching staff will make him a, you know, whatever flaws you think will make him a very functional winning player. But the question is, I don't know if I believe in the shot or not. Like the percentages are what they are. They're not good.
But is that because he takes bad shots though? Lucini, like, is that part of it just because he takes, like, LaMelo kind of?
It's a combo. There is, like, a slight hitch at the top where, like, he, like, kind of twists his, like, arm a little bit. Like, it's right. Very weird. There is also the fact that his shot selection was terrible. Like, let's just call it what it was, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's bad. He takes a lot of really terrible early shot clock three-pointers. like Steve Kerr, like it'd be like his rookie year will be like watching Monte Ellis.
Oh, nice.
Like, yeah, it's gonna be a process with Anthony Edwards, but like if the shot comes along, like if he shoots it, he is a shot creator, like what we talk about with like Bradley Beal, I think.
Right.
Like,
okay.
He has that ability. But it's going to take some time, I think. Yep. Like, and that's before we get to the defense, which is almost why I say, like, the Victor Oladipo, Bradley Beal hybrid as well. Because, like, he has the tools of Victor Oladipo on defense. He just doesn't have the wherewithal and the will where, like, Vic was, you know.
The tools of Oladipo and the effort of last year Bradley Beal.
Yeah. Yeah, of 2020 Bradley Beal. So, yeah, it's complicated. With Anthony, I don't know that I would take him if I was the Warriors. But
the Warriors don't want him either. Don't worry. I don't want anyone.
Yeah, like I don't know. I don't know what to tell you like about what should the Warriors take him. Like there's a world where that dude becomes a motherfucker, man. Like there is a world where that dude it, like fucking ends worlds and like extends this dynasty. There's a world where he's like better Dion Waiters. Like,
right.
Like he'll be better than Dion.
Yeah, it's time to watch some good basketball and not reflect on Dion Waiters.
Sam Vecini, sir. Thanks for coming on, man.
Appreciate your time.
Let's do the one thing real quick on 2021.
Oh, right? That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Andy wanted to do that.
Yep.
And I feel like I've like stopped Andy from talking like 90 times during this conversation.
So. That's usually my job, but
I would say that there are at least three guys in the 2020 draft or 2021 draft that I would take at number one. There are potentially seven guys that I would take at number one in this draft in 2021. 2021 is going to be a very good draft. The Warriors were very smart to get that Timberwolves pick. Because even if it's like five, which I think that's probably where I'd like say that pick is going to end up, even if it's like seven, like they're going to come away with a real piece.
They're going to come away with someone who has the same amount of upside, if not more than what they could get it to, is what you're saying.
I think so. Wings, yes, there are. You know, Jalen Green is like a 6'5" creative.
How many different Jalen or Jadens are there in this draft?
A lot of Jalens. I don't know if there are a ton of Jadens, but there are a ton of Jalens because of Jalen Rose. But in regard to like wings, yes, there are a lot. There is BJ Boston and Terrence Clark, both of whom are slated to play at Kentucky. Clark is more of like a do-it-all wing. Boston is more of like a consummate scorer. Jalen Green is like a scoring guard who can be like a lead shot creator, kind of similar to what Anthony Edwards does, right? Just a little bit better than Anthony Edwards, to be honest. 2021, who am I missing here?
Kuminga. Okay,
Cunningham's like a point guard, kind of. He's wing size. He's like 6'7" with a 7-foot wingspan, but it is so fucking good that you just clear it out and play. Like that guy is I think he's like Zion, like Luka level prospect, and like people aren't talking about it.
Can he shoot?
It's getting better.
But like, tries to shoot.
Like I've talked to Oklahoma State staff and they're like, look, we have like a shooting specialist and like he's not as good as that guy, but he's our second best shooter. Ooh. And then like you look at the passing, the open court playmate,
right.
He's fucking ridiculous. Like, and the funny thing is, like, this sucks for the Warriors. I mean, it kind of doesn't because they wouldn't have ended up with him at number two. But, like, he could have been in the 2020 NBA draft if he wanted to. Like, he could have reclassified, gone to college this year, and been in this class and just decided not to.
Okay.
Evan Mobley? Is that Coutinho? Does it have anything to do with
No, I don't think it has anything to do with Coutinho. His dad is an assistant at USC. Very smart kid.
Coutinho would have a 7-foot
son. Yeah, I was going to say he's a center, though. So
yeah, Evan is 7-foot tall. More like a...
It's another Jalen.
Stylistically, there's like Tim Duncan-y like stylistic stuff there. Like in terms of what he wants to do. Like he wants to play in like that mid post and like he shoots like bank.
He's like old school.
And like can like
but he wants he wants to be a big, which is that correct?
It's like a little bit more of like a modern. It's like what you would imagine Tim Duncan would look like. And this is stylistically, he's not as good as Tim Duncan, but like
sure,
it's like what you would imagine Tim Duncan looks like.
If you drop 21-year-old Tim Duncan into 2020,
yeah. Into 2021. Yeah.
By the way, 3 Jalens in the lottery.
That's the only reason I asked it. I thought I saw one of them was Jaden.
Jalen Johnson.
Might have been scrolling too fast.
I don't know that he's very good, to be frank.
But he'll go 2 then in this year's draft.
I'm not real convinced on Jalen Johnson yet.
Yeah, but anyway, it sounds like a lot of guys here that just – if you're the Warriors, if you're trading the pick even, that's the one that has value, right? If you're thinking of even trading that Minnesota pick. But you're saying if they had to pick one, they should just wait till next year and try to flip this one. I think it's probably their thought process too, if you're Warriors front office.
Yeah, I think. Like Scotty Barnes. I really like Scotty Barnes. Like Scotty Barnes is a motherfucker, man. That guy's awesome. Zaire Williams is really good. Like a lot of wings. Jalen Suggs is really good. Greg Brown's like a crazy freaking athlete. Like,
just a bunch of 6'8 kids who can do everything.
They really are all 6'8. It's crazy. It's
like they're all between like 6'6 and 6'8. It's insane. Next year is a different draft than this year.
We're trying to argue if Anthony Edwards is 6'4, 6'5 over here. Next year.
I think he got measured at 6'4 at McDonald's last year for what it's worth.
Yeah, he might be 6'3 then.
He's like 6'4.5 or something. McDonald's is pretty good.
Like their measurements are pretty accurate.
Nike basketball kind of off the bat. Yeah, McDonald's tends to be good. Nike Basketball Academy is the one where I get like all sorts of like I've like talked to players that are like they're just like a little bit haphazard like how they do this there
player like, friendly years. Like Andy 6'3 if he goes there
well no it's just like it's just like not, it's like the Connaughton thing. Do you remember the Pat Connaughton thing?
I don't actually.
Pat Connaughton went to the NBA draft combine. He went to both Portsmouth and the NBA draft combine. So okay. Like we have what we would think would be like a real measurement. And then right. We have what happened with his combine measurements. So I think he had like, I forget exactly what the numbers are, but like he had like an 8.5, 8.6 something standing reach at the Portsmouth measurement thing. And then he came to the combine and he had like an 8.1 or like 8 foot standing reach or something. And what people think, this is speculation on the part of
draft conspiracy theory.
Yeah. They think that he like threw the standing reach part in order to like set up for the highest max vertical. Or highest vertical leap. And he had like a 45 or something vertical leap.
Oh, I get what you're saying. So that he did the thing where he didn't put his arms out the whole way.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he like went like this kind of as opposed to like stretching all the way up.
Right.
Wow.
That's at some point I'm going to have to ask Connaughton about it because I'm very curious. And like, it's a great story, I feel like.
Well, there shouldn't be like a 4 to 5 inch difference. Like usually it's like if it's 1 inch off, you're like, oh, what's going on here? Five is just egregious.
And the Milwaukee Bucks fell for it. And this is why they were one game away from getting swept.
The Bucks didn't draft them. The Blazers.
You got to let me get the joke in. Say, come on.
Pat Connaughton, by the way, is like potentially the best athlete, like at doing many things in the NBA. Like, he can throw a football, like, 80 yards. He throws, like, a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. He has, like, a 44-inch vertical leap. Like, Pat Connaughton is, like, a weird, like, one of those dudes who's just, like, a freak show athlete who's, like, good at everything.
I thought you were going to say best white athlete, but he might just be the best athlete.
Yeah, I threw in that sneaky thing. I was hoping that people would catch that.
Yeah, they'll catch it. They'll catch it. Oh, they'll get it. With the Pat Connaughton story, we'll get out of here. He's actually pretty good too. That's about where, not bad.
Sam, just to be clear, he is not why the Bucks are losing. A little unfair.
although we spent a lot of time trashing him this year, but Giannis needs better players. You know?
It's my favorite thing in the world.
Less Pat Connaughton's and less Dante DiVincenzo's.
Pat Connaughton's NBA player comparison on NBADraft.net, which I just went to like try and get his like measurements or whatever.
Right.
It's Adam Haluschka, who like I had to like dive deep in my brain for a minute here. I'm like, is that like the guy from like 2009 in like Iowa? Like, wow. what are we doing here? Like, why are we comparing anyone to Adam Haluschka?
I mean, they probably just really didn't want to have to live down was Deshaun Stevenson, Michael Jordan. So they're going really, really.
They pivoted out. Back the other way. Really, really went back the other way.
I don't know. Can't just be comparing every white player to Steve Nash or John Stockton.
I've been trying to do better with the cross-racial comparisons this year. Like comparing like Tyrell Terry to Steve Nash or to Steve Kerr. Like
there you go. Yeah. Denny compared Denny to, not Danilo Gallinari. Come up with anyone but that. No.
Like yeah, I did the Lamar Odom. Wow.
He's not as good as Lamar Odom. Was actually really good defensively.
Then you got 30 more. Yeah, I was going to say, you spend 30 more minutes. We'll talk about Denny if it's Lamar Odom. Jesus. Oh, man. Oh. All right, Sam. Appreciate it, man.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate it. This was fun. Hit me up whenever. I'm happy.
Stay safe. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be back when the draft happens next March, we'll get you on one more time. We'll get you.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. We're talking BetOnline. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. So head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's promo code BLUEWIRE, all in one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.